Well, 17 years ago, I stood here for the first time. We had a little daughter and one son on the way at that time. Trevor was 7 months along, and in two more months, December 5th, we would welcome our son into the world, and a couple of years later, our second daughter, third child, Carissa. So a lot has happened in 17 years for us. We've lived in the same home. About 10 of those years, we've had the same dog. About 5 of those years, we wanted to trade her off for a new model. She tears up things, but no, she's a good dog. I've seen a lot in 17 years. You can imagine. A lot of new faces. A lot of God stories. Some of it incredibly rewarding that I just, you know, I got depressed at the end of Sunday because I knew there was a whole other week before we could get together again to hear more of what God's doing in people's hearts. There were times and are times where I'm depressed for different reasons. Where I wonder, Lord, I don't see it. I wonder, are you changing lives like you used to? Then I hear a wonderful report from Women's Retreat, a woman that gave her heart to Jesus, who smiles at me like she's going to grab this microphone if I let up this morning, which encourages me hugely. I see people going on the missions field. I'm one of them. I led a team in July to Honduras. Third time for me. I believe around 10th time for our church, John. Is that about right? Lots of people getting plugged into the program, what God's doing in the world. I've seen some people recover from nearly ending their marriages, and I've seen others give up. I've seen tremendous victories and haunting defeats. And today, I start a new series called Storm Clouds Rising. You probably get from just the title a sense of where my heart's at. As I look out, as I look at our church, but as I look at our world, I see storm clouds rising. Rod Hill is my favorite meteorologist. Think he's the best. But anyway, a local weatherman, we call him. He's got a lot of credentials. I remember paying attention when he first started here a couple years ago, a few years back, thinking, I think he gets it. Tough area in the country to predict, by the way, I'm told anyway. Recently, he said some things that I stopped and listened to. He was describing, or rather predicting, the coming weather for fall and winter here in Oregon. Maybe you heard the report. And he said, as he described a condition, an atmospheric condition known as La Nina, not El Nino, but La Nina, that it would lead to a much wetter and much colder winter. So if you believe in predictions like that, you'll want to keep your slicker and your parka nearby as the winter approaches. It's inexact for sure, the science of predicting, you know, trends like that or climate changes or whatever. But people have done it for a long time, haven't they? I predict a colder or drier or wetter or hotter or whatever season to come. Maybe you can help me with this saying that maybe you've said, red skies in the morning, sailors take warnings. Red skies at night, Sailor's Delight. See, you do it too. I often do that. If I see a red sky in the morning, I think, ooh, what's ahead? Now, you may know that those words are right out of the Bible. Or maybe you don't. So let me show you this morning. My Bible's open to where they're found in Matthew chapter 16 on page 693. I'd like you to just turn there if you would. And I want you to check out something Jesus said here. He was asked by his chief critics very often to trap him. Their intentions were terribly impure. There was nothing noble about their questioning, almost ever. And here they are in Matthew 16, asking him to show them a sign from heaven. And he answers to point to the practice of reading the skies. Matthew 16, his response to the Pharisees and Sadducees who came to him, and Matthew doesn't mix words, they came to test him, asking for a sign. So he replies, verse 2 of chapter 16, "When evening comes, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. Red sky at night, sailors take delight. And in the morning, today it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast. Red sky in the morning, sailors warning. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky," Jesus goes on to say, "but you cannot interpret the signs of the times." This series that I've titled Storm Clouds Rising will be my attempt to read the signs and the times in which we live. Let me say on the front end, so you're not disappointed later and thinking I want a refund or whatever, I don't plan to predict the Antichrist. I don't plan to predict when the present age will end. It will end. And you'll see why as we look into God's Word in coming weeks. It will end. I'm not going to go there, though. That's way too far out on a limb. Besides, Jesus went on to say, no one really knows except the Father. So it's a fruitless venture. Don't waste your time, we would say today. So I'm not going to go there. But I want to correctly, as best I'm able to do, identify signs, we would say, of the times. What are these times in which we live? And my interest is far more significant than to simply or merely satisfy one's curiosity. This will not be a series that is light on the ears or on the heart. It won't. If you want religion light by now, you would have left, because that's not what I'm about. I can't live with myself if I have to just make people happy and feel fuzzy. That's not me. I would go further to say that's not the Word of God. But I plan to probe and to pry and to identify as much as possible some of the troubling signs that the Bible points to, which indicate that we, in fact, may be living in the last days. All right, I think I've got your curiosity. But before I show you, let me be very clear about something. My point isn't to simply point out the sinful stuff of a dark and desperate and fallen and selfish and sick world in which we live. Let me say that again. I do not plan to simply point fingers and go, ooh, yuck, stay close, everybody, pull in tight. Hopefully evil will pass us by. That'd be easy to do. But my mission is much more personal than that. It will be to ask the harder questions like, how much of the dark and ugly and selfish and sinful and sick stuff of this world lives inside me. Is part of me. See why it's uncomfortable already? So much easier to notice it, point it out, and flee from it out there somewhere. But it's a whole nother story to look at it inside. So this morning, I would like you to please look with me to the last letter that Paul wrote before he went to be with Jesus, something he longed for, 2 Timothy chapter 3. It's on page 843. If you want to go that way, you'll find your way to this third of four chapters in the last letter he wrote. And he writes Timothy. He writes him words that God had given him to be passed along to the next generation of Christ followers, like Timothy. And extrapolating from that, like you and me. These are words intended for our use, for our impact, and for our benefit. So, they are written in the year AD 66, which is significant for lots of reasons. Let me point out the most obvious. Just 4 years later, AD 70, Jerusalem lay in ruin. The temple gutted and destroyed. Probably the only thing that could approximate that, only it falls way short for us, would be if Washington took a direct hit and all the icons of our nationalism, the White House, the Washington Monument, the Jefferson, the Lincoln, the whole deal, the Capitol building, lay in ruin. You'd probably feel kind of bad. Okay? Now, I know we can joke about it right now, you know. Hey, man, that might be a good start, you know, whatever. But forget that. I mean, you would feel terribly crestfallen. Well, that's about as far as I can go in an analogy. The truth is, it's way worse than that 4 years later when he wrote this. Included in the assessment of the times in which he wrote was this guy that was like Captain Evil. He was like the image of evil. If you think of Osama bin Laden today, comes to mind as maybe the poster child for all that's evil. Okay? The man in his day was the same. He was the Osama bin Laden, or the genuine real Adolf Hitler of his time. His name was Nero. And he was the guy in charge, known as the Roman Emperor. He was a horrible hombre. I mean, not a good guy. He made sport of killing Christians. He was bad news from start to finish. Now, Paul is warning Timothy of dark times that would come. Here's the grabber, and should make you leap from your seat and jump right into the middle of this discussion. He's describing these hard times to come and doesn't give them a defined date, making this conclusion for us. It's somewhere from the time he wrote this, AD 66, until the time in which Jesus Christ returns. Folks, welcome to our world. Now, let's look at his warning about these days. Mark this, he says in chapter 3, verse 1. There will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Having a form of godliness, but denying its power. And to all of those, Paul says, have nothing to do with them. What we have here is a warning that terrible times are to come. Paul gives an extensive, if you were counting, list, a profile, if you will, of 19 characteristics that would mark, on a macro scale, the meltdown of morality in days to come. Folks, I have a hard time not seeing and being able to illustrate every single one of these 19 descriptors in our day with very little difficulty. The times in which you and I live are perilous and difficult. That's what he means by there will be terrible times in the last days. Days, the words literally mean days which are hard to deal with. You feel like that sometimes? I don't know how many of us, I'm certainly one of them that has to shut off the news. I'll sometimes go a week or more with no news whatsoever. I can't. Not just stomach it, my spirit can't take it. I lay there and I think, why am I up at 4 o'clock? And I check and see, well, sometimes it's my dog, but other times it's because I got too much junk in today's news. I just have to unplug. I just have to say, you know what? I'm not sure. They're hard times. I'm not sure how to deal with these times. Look back at the word and circle it if you'd like in your Bible. There will be terrible times. Realize this, that in last days, some translations, New American says, difficult times will come. What are those times? It's the same word, by the way, that's used over in Matthew chapter 8, verse 28. It's the same word translated violent in describing those two demoniacs. Remember they came out? And Jesus confronted them, and they were so violent that no one knew what to do with them. That's the same word. Prompting some scholars to think actually a description of these days in which we live is demonic. And I don't think that's any stretch at all. But look at the list of 19. We're going to get better acquainted in coming weeks with this list. Is this not a list that makes Satan smile? If this is not demonic, what is it? And in these days, in these times, it will be difficult to know what is to be done. Ever felt like that? I'm sure I'm not the only one. Are we to run? Are we to fight? Are we to speak out? Confront these things when we see them? Are we to mind our own business? Leave it be? Folks, the Christian life is lived out on a battleground, not on a playground. Paul says, verse 1, mark this. It's how my Bible translates his words. Mark this. What he's saying here is realize this. Realize it. Don't fail to pay attention. Don't become distracted. Mark this. See these things for what they are. Signs. Indications that are to be recognized as precursors to the wonderful and glorious return of Jesus Christ. Folks, there's a piece of hope. They are, to me, as I read this list and I read the words that are used to describe marking this and terrible times, it's as though you're driving down a road and you see a sign. I recently went to the men's retreat at the coast, and I took two different roads, one going and one coming back, and different roads that had different curves and different signs along the way. Frankly, both roads need some serious work, but Highway 26 and then the one coming back, I forget what I was on. It felt like a dirt road anyway. But and I'm pulling my trailer, which makes me all the more alert to what's ahead. Because when the sign says, as you're cruising at 55, the sign says 35 ahead, and it's got a curve to it. If you're in a sports car, sometimes you can go, all right, it's going to be sweet. And you want to, sometimes, you know, it's your ticket, but you want to find your way around that corner and feel the hug of the road and all that kind of stuff. If you're in a trailer, you're pulling a trailer, you got about 15,000 pounds going down the highway, and guess what? You pay attention to those signs, and you slow it down. You don't disregard them. You're drawn in. You notice them. Jesus talked extensively about signs that said that the end of the age was ahead. This sign that says, slow down, or be aware. Mark this. The most famous of Jesus' words are found in three of the four Gospels. They're known as the Synoptic Gospels. Maybe you've heard that term along the way in your Bible study. The three Gospels that make up the Synoptic Gospels are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. You can see all kinds of similarities in those three. And then John sort of stands alone. He's more theological in his focus. I want to show you from one of those just real quick here this morning. Probably the most famous words of Jesus as he describes a road sign coming. Matthew chapter 24. So we started in Matthew 16. Go back to Matthew 24. These are words that he spoke the last week of his life. So you go from words that Paul wrote in a letter to be his last, two words here that Jesus speaks the last week of his life on earth. And Jesus is discussing here in Matthew chapter 24. If you want the other parallel passages, it's Mark chapter 13 and Luke chapter 21. All three of them, you'll go, whoa. Do what they call a harmonizing of those three passages, and you'll get a lot out of it. It's really cool. It's all known as the Olivet Discourse, which is named for the location in which Jesus spoke these words. He's at the Mount of Olives, which is just across the Kidron Valley from the temple, the Jerusalem. Okay, so that's the scene, and he's in the Mount of Olives, which happens to be the same location later in this same week where Jesus went and prayed, God, take this cup from me, Father. And he sweated drops of blood in that scene. Same place. A favorite place of reflection for him, as well as a place of teaching. And here we are in Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse. And he says there are going to be signs. And in chapter 24, the first response to these signs, he says in verse 4, watch out. Circle those words, important words. Watch out. It'd be like a road sign without a twisty look to it. It just simply says two words, watch out. One of the yellow warning road signs. Watch out that no one deceives you. See that? Watch out that no one deceives you. Whenever you read something in the Bible, realize it's the person Jesus is making a point that is very possible. We could be deceived, or he would never say, watch out that no one deceives you. See the simple connection? That's in verse 4. Look a little bit further to chapter, or same chapter, but later, same discourse, to verse 42, he repeats himself. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. And then he repeats a similar theme two verses later in verse 44. So you also must be ready. Watch out. Keep watch and be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect Him. So just how watchful are you in these times? How clearly do you see some of the signs of terrible times in our world? Need a closer look? You're going to get one in the coming weeks. We're going to look at them for what they are. We're not going to make anything up. We're simply going to notice the signs. But there's a deeper question that I want to probe. And that's the one I alluded to earlier. Have some of these terrible signs, the list that we read earlier from 2 Timothy 3, have they appeared in you? Are they traits that are troublingly present in our lives? Not at all comfortable for us to search for signs like these when we're searching on the inside, is it? It's just not. I'm reading a book that's bothering me. One of several right now. This one is by an author I first became acquainted with my first year in seminary more than 30 years ago. Actually, 30 years ago. Ronald Sider is his name. He has written extensively. He's a gifted analyst of our times, of our world. He wrote a book that... frankly, should be must reading for Christians today, called Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. That's not the book that's bugging me right now. The one that's bugging me has got a kind of a goofy title. You have to think about it. The Scandal of the Evangelical Conscience. I've ordered 15 copies for men in my early morning group to meet together for accountability and Bible study. In it, he searches for answers to this question: why are Christians living just like the rest of the world? Okay? That's what the whole book's about. And he tells a story in the early going of a great religion that I want to capture for you briefly here. Once upon a time, there was a great religion that over the centuries had spread all over the world. But in those lands where it had existed for a long time, its adherents slowly grew complacent, lukewarm, and skeptical. Indeed, many of the leaders of its oldest groups even publicly rejected some of the religion's most basic beliefs. In response, a renewal movement emerged, passionately championing the historic claims of the old religion, and eagerly inviting unbelievers everywhere to embrace the ancient faith. Rejecting the skepticism of leaders who no longer believed in a God who works miracles, members of the renewal movement vigorously argued that their God not only had performed miraculous signs in the past, but still miraculously transforms all who believe today. Indeed, a radical, miraculous new birth that began a lifetime of sweeping moral renewal and transformation was at the center of their preaching. Over time, the renewal movement flourished to the point of becoming one of the most influential wings of the whole religion. Not surprisingly, the movement's numbers translated into political influence. And the renewal movement was so confident of its beliefs and claims that it persuaded the nation's top political leaders to have the government work more closely with religious social service organizations to solve the nation's horrendous social problems. Members of this renewal movement knew that miraculous moral transformation of character frequently happened when broken persons embraced the great religion. They also lobbied politicians to strengthen the traditional definition of marriage because their ancient text taught that a lifelong covenant between a man and a woman was at the center of the Creator's design for the family. Then the pollsters started conducting scientific polls of the general population. In spite of the renewal movement's proud claims to miraculous transformation, the poll showed that members of the movement divorced their spouses just as often as their secular neighbors. They beat their wives as often as their neighbors. They were almost as materialistic and even more racist than their pagan friends. The hardcore skeptics smiled in cynical amusement at this blatant hypocrisy. The general population was puzzled and disgusted. Many of the renewal movement's leaders simply stepped up the tempo of their now enormously successful, highly sophisticated promotion program. Others wept. He concludes, "This, alas, is roughly the situation of evangelical Americanism today." When Jesus described the day and hour of those difficult times, he told his faithful to follow closely. Keep your eyes on him. Right after that passage we just read in Matthew 24, he finishes the discourse this way, beginning in verse 45. "Who then is faithful and wise, the wise servant, whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, 'My master is staying away for a long time.' And then he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on the day when he does not expect him, and in an hour that he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Faithful or faithless? That's what this story presents. Times are coming. Many of them are here now. Faithful or faithless is a choice I must make every single day, and so must you. Storm clouds are rising. Are you carrying on as one who is faithful and wise as you await his return? I hope so. That's my personal passion and mission as your pastor, is to help you do so. Or, to finish my question, are you like some in Noah's day, unaware of the pending judgment, and sadly unprepared for the sorrow to come? Please bow your heads with me, if you would. I would like you to pray for yourself. And I'd like you to pray that God makes you faithful in the face of perilous times. It would be tragic if we simply intellectually absorbed what was said this morning and didn't, or avoided, an internal look. It's not comfortable. And believe me, in weeks to come, it won't be easy for me to say some of the things that this list of 19 is pointing to, nor will it be easy to hear. But just like you, I have an interest in fidelity to God and to His Word, to the calling on my life to pastor you until Jesus changes that direction for my life, or comes home for me, for us. Will you talk to Him right now about the storm clouds you see in your heart? And as an expression of your faith in Jesus and your willingness to be faithful, following Him no matter what, I want to ask you this morning, as a way of saying, Jesus, I plan to be faithful, I plan to deal with whatever you reveal as out of alignment in my life in these coming weeks. If you're willing to say, you know, God, that's I'm not just going to know about things. I'm not just going to learn and see things. I'm going to address them in my life with your help. And I'm going to ask you this morning to stand with me. Right now, I'd like you to stand if you're willing to say, Jesus, you have in me a receptive person, a teachable individual saying, I want to, no matter what you show me, I want to do it. It does my heart good to see this room full of people standing. Thank you for meeting with us, Jesus. Make every man and woman, young person in this room, faithful.